Mr. McDonald. Good morning to you, but let's give everybody a chance to get in and out of the courtroom, please. Rush hour at the door there, but it's about to clear up, I believe. You may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is William McDonald. I am the appellant in this action, and I am proceeding pro se. I would like to reserve the usual 2 minutes for rebuttal, please. This case is an appeal of a final adverse decision by the State Bar Commission on a Rule 1B motion for admission to the bar. Nebraska Court Rule 3-119B provides for admission by motion of an attorney who is licensed in another state, who is actively and substantially engaged in the practice of law in another state for at least 3 of the 5 years preceding application, and for an applicant who has met certain educational requirements and has appropriate background check without concerns for character and fitness. This matter, the administrative decision below, the State Bar Commission agreed that in this application, the appellant is active and in good standing in another jurisdiction, that the appellant was engaged in the practice of law as defined by the Nebraska court rules for more than 3 of the 5 years preceding application. And then the commission concluded that this activity as active and substantial practice of law was actually not substantial and denied the application. So the interpretation of the words active and substantial in the Class 1B requirement that an applicant have actively and substantially participated in an activity constituting the practice of law appears to be a case of first impression before this court. When we examine the plain language of the court rule, we see that Nebraska Court Rule 3-119 does not require that applicants, Class 1B motion applicants, have worked exclusively as a law professor or whatever other practice of law activity that they've participated in. They're not required to have worked exclusively in that role. They are not required to have worked full-time in that role. They are not required to have worked primarily in that role. Instead, the plain language of the court rule calls for the applicant to have actively and substantially engaged in some activity, one of the 6 categories of activities that are plainly enumerated in Rule 3-101E. There are 6 subsections. One of those subsections, P5, describes employment as a professor of law or as a teacher of law in an ABA-accredited law school. The reasonable and usual definitions of actively and substantially should apply in this case. They were clearly met. The record contains overwhelming evidence that the applicant had extensive activity and work effort as a law school professor.
What does the record show us about how much time you spent at the law school? How many classes did you teach? I think this all comes down to substantial. How substantial were you?
I certainly agree. I think that is the question. What is substantial? From a factual standpoint, the evidence is replete with both the activities and the work product. For example, the record shows that the applicant was employed continuously for 8 continuous years as a condition of his employment as a law school professor. 25% of his time contractually and in fact was allocated to the law school. 25% of approximately 55 to 60 hours per week of a work week. The standard requirement for a physician in the School of Medicine Department of Pediatrics, the baseline expectation is 55 hours a week. So this applicant was on the law school faculty, served as a course director, developed a course curriculum for multiple courses, taught the courses, prepared law school examinations, graded law school examinations, and even outside of those individual courses, the record shows that the applicant attended faculty meetings, performed legal research, writing, publication, that the applicant sponsored law student activities, made presentations to law student activities outside of the classroom, but also provided a continuing medical and legal education on various areas of health.
I think that's a qualitative answer to the chief's question. What's the quantitative answer? 14, 16 hours a week?
It was approximately 25% of a, I think we can see in rough round numbers, a 60-hour week. So that would be about 15 hours a week around the clock, I mean around the calendar.
Thank you.
So what did the commission suggest ought to be substantial?
So that's a very interesting question, Your Honor. So the commission never specifically articulated a standard. There is language in the transcript, which is highlighted in the appellant's brief, that seems to suggest that the commission is using a preponderance of time. One member suggests that substantial means a majority of time worked. The chairman of the commission suggested that substantially is a synonym for mainly or mainly of the work time. And we would suggest that's a confusion of two entirely different standards. The standard of substantial is quite different from the standard of preponderance. If we look in an analogous fashion at evidentiary standards, a substantial evidence standard is radically different from a preponderance of the evidence standard. We can also just simply look at it in common language terms. If I can turn to my health law expertise and suggest to the court, if one of us today were to suddenly develop crushing chest pain and experience that for 8 hours today, all of us would agree that we had chest pain for a substantial part of the day, regardless of whether that's more than 50% of the 24-hour period. So substantial means, and we quote a couple of different dictionaries, of considerable importance, of important size or worth, concerning the essentials of something, real and tangible rather than imaginary. It's clear that the appellant did all of these things in the role of a law school professor.
How is a bar commission to know what is substantial and what is not?
I would suggest that the court has done a very good job of building in safeguards in the court rules for that. So, for example, when the types of activities that can constitute active practice of law, there's a built-in safeguard, for example, for the law school professor role. It says that that activity has to be part of employment and continuous through the course of employment. So your rules already protect against that individual who may serve as a volunteer adjunct professor and teach one course and be done with it, or who may come in and get a stipend for one semester. You actually require it in your rules that this law professor be employed and have it be a condition of employment. So that right there gives you some protection that this is a real, substantial, active thing of weight and merit. Additionally, by just using the plain language, substantial, we can rule out those things that otherwise might be risky. For example, some professors have emeritus designations. So an emeritus professor may not actually teach a course, but simply has a designation. The same standard applies to the other types of activity that count as practice of law. For example, practicing in a law firm counts as active practice of law. But even then, it has to be substantial. You have to do it. If you are a retired partner, but you're still drawing a partnership salary or a partnership draw, but you're not participating in the activity of the practice, I would suggest that the commission could easily say that was not substantial or active.
I think the language is substantially engaged. Is that right?
That is correct.
So what's engaged?
I would suggest carrying out the required activities of a law professor.
How many classes a year or semester did you teach?
I would teach one course per academic year. The full-time load of a full-time law professor would be either three or four courses in a year. So by teaching one, I was either doing 33% or 25% of what a full-time professor would do. And then I also did all those other things that a law professor do. Come to faculty meetings, do research, sponsor law student activities, that sort of thing. If there are no other questions, I'll reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Ertz, good morning to you.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, an out-of-state attorney seeking admission to the Nebraska Bar, a full-time member as a Class 1B applicant, has the burden to establish that he or she was actively and substantially engaged in the practice of law for 3 to 5 years immediately preceding the application.
Do you concede that this applicant was actively engaged?
I think the commission did find that, and I think that that's not an issue here in this case.
So it's substantially engaged?
Substantially engaged in the practice of law.
That's where the rub is.
Yes, sorry, I was reciting the rule.
Thank you.
And so we believe as a matter of law, a one-quarter time teaching appointment does not constitute substantial practice of law. And for that reason, the court should affirm the Bar Commission's determination. Now, we don't dispute anything in the record in this case about Dr. McDonald's qualifications. He submitted a bar application to the Nebraska State Bar in March.
So the public won't be endangered if he gets a license to practice law?
Well, if he meets the definition of substantial engagement in the practice of law, I don't think there's any question about his character and fitness. I guess I don't make that determination. The Bar Commission does. But there doesn't seem to be any question in the record about his character and fitness. I think the question is whether he comes within the parameters of a Class 1B applicant. And the active and substantial engagement in the practice of law is...
Well, let's say that the court decides that he should get his license. Will the public be endangered? Will we make a mistake?
If this court decides that he should get his license?
Yes.
I guess I'm not going to say that you guys will make a bad decision in that case. I don't think it's my place to do so. I think this court is the one who determines who should be admitted to the Nebraska Bar.
Thank you, Mr. Ertz, and I want to remind you that the court does not like to be referred to as you guys.
Oh, I apologize. I'm sorry. So Dr. McDonald submitted a 2016 application to the Nebraska Bar. So the look-back period is to March of 2011. And just to clarify for the record, Dr. McDonald taught at the University of Utah from March 2011 through May of 2014. From June of 2014 to 2016, he was working as a physician here in the state of Nebraska, and there was no practice of law. So for the seven available semesters, he taught four of those, two different courses, health law and the American healthcare system, and then was a policy research director for a student in the other semester.
What percentage of a law professor's time do you think should be devoted to the practice of law? Where should we cut? We have testimony, and apparently the record reflects that Mr. McDonald spent 25% or 30% of what a law professor normally does. What is your position on what that percentage ought to be?
And I agree with the Bar Commission's determination that it doesn't have to be full time. That could be some mere technicality, which would not serve the purposes of the bar. But I did look to what other jurisdictions require, and from my research, it looks like 19 different states require full time teaching in the practice of law in order for that to constitute whatever the equivalent may be of substantial practice or primarily engaged in the practice of law or active practice of law. I think the terms vary between state to state.
Are you advocating for a quantitative analysis as opposed to a qualitative analysis, to use the terms that my colleague did earlier?
So I don't believe a bright line rule is necessary to decide this case. I believe it's a matter of law, as the Bar Commission did. 25% by contract, that's Exhibit 10.2.
Does that suggest you're using a quantitative assessment?
I suppose I'm setting a floor, not a ceiling. I don't think that there's necessarily any certain number that an applicant has to hit of hours per week. But I would say that I would give the suggestion that it must demonstrate a significant, the practice of law must demonstrate a significant aspect of that person's livelihood. And I don't know if 25% means that.
I think on the qualitative side, forget a poorly informed hypothetical, but let's say you have a person who's spending 10% of their time and they write a legal thesis that wins the $1 zillion X Prize and as a contribution to the literature, but it wasn't quantitatively greater than some small percentage.
And I understand that.
Is that substantially engaged?
There are going to be some of those hypotheticals that would be at the outer limits of any rule, and I think in that type of circumstance, there could an applicant could say, court, I may not meet substantial practice of law, but I would request a waiver under 3-121. Here's what I've done. Here's my petition verifying all my qualifications, and here's why I should qualify as a member of the
Breast. Is that what you're suggesting, Mr. McDonald, do?
Well, I think at this point we're here to, discuss whether he's met the definition of the active and substantial practice of law. I don't know how this court would decide the waiver, and I'm not here to suggest an answer to that question. I'm here to suggest that the substantial practice of law as a matter of law means more than 25%.
If we were to decide that the facts of this case were sufficient to meet the actively and substantially engaged standard, what would be the adverse or unintended consequences, if any, to future cases that would arise out of our focus on the facts in this particular case?
I think maybe one potential issue that I would see, it may not provide a lot of guidance to the next applicant who may not have engaged, or may not be a teacher of law, who may not understand exactly what the parameters would be or what substantially engaged in the practice of law would be compared to Dr. McDonald's specific situation.
Is there fact specific? Is that?
So in this case, Dr. McDonald has a remarkable resume. I'm not here to dismiss any of his qualifications as a doctor or as an attorney. We're just here discussing the 3 of the 5 years immediately preceding his application, whether those were the substantial engagement in the practice of law.
So does this all come down to what guidance do we give to the Bar Commission and the rest of the world that we know it when we see it?
Yeah, I guess that was one suggestion that I've heard. And I think that's why the Bar Commission was careful not to give a rigid definition in its decision to Dr. McDonald and its final adverse determination.
As I understand it, you're not asking for a rigid definition.
I don't think this case presents the necessity for a rigid determination, but I have looked at other, at all of the other states plus the District of Columbia, and some of the other adjectives or adverbs used to describe the practice of law are primarily engaged in the practice of law, engaged in the practice of law as a principal means of livelihood, engagement on a full-time basis, a principal occupation, a major portion of time and energy. We think all of those would fit into the definition of substantial practice of law.
With perhaps the exception of the last one, the major portion, wouldn't all of those that you recited, wouldn't they clearly be a higher standard than substantially?
Well, I think you look
principally, at principally, substantially. Isn't principally more than substantial?
I think it depends on what definition you take of substantial. As one of the Bar Commissioners noted, in the Oxford Dictionary, substantially is defined as greater significant, to a greater significant extent, or for the most part. And I think that primarily and substantially, using that definition of substantial, would be nearly the equivalent.
Can substantial be just like a lot as compared instead of compared to something? Not a comparative term?
It could mean a lot, and it could mean, as Dr. McDonald suggests, of a significant quality, significant character. And I fully admit that definition is out there. I found 5 different definitions in the Merriam-Webster Dictionary of what substantial means. So I'm not here to suggest that one is necessarily better than the other, but when the active and substantial practice of law requirement in for a Class 1B applicant is used in lieu of the bar examination, which determines an applicant's competency, that the definition should be something close to the primarily engaged in the practice of law. For that reason, I'd ask the Bar Commission's determination be affirmed.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal?
35 seconds.
35 seconds, Mr. McDonald.
Thank you, Your Honor. It's somewhat ironic that the state seems to be calling for the court to change to some sort of specific hourly requirement. In their brief, they cited 4 states which, very different from Nebraska, have specific hourly requirements. 2 of them, Alaska's and Wyoming, respectively require 15 hours a week and 6 hours a week. In this case, appellant actually would have met those requirements and would have been under those specific requirements admitted to those states. Now, admittedly, appellant would not have met the requirements in Illinois and Minnesota. So this court has to, even if you were to adopt one of those standards, you'd have to choose.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We will go on to the